Hello, and welcome to Technically Speaking, where scientists and engineers come together to chat about common interests, share knowledge, and satisfy some curiosity. I'm Antonia, and I'm joined by Laura and Ellie to talk about rats and behavioural studies that involve them. So, Laura, you used to keep rats, and you are a scientist. Did you ever mix the two?
Did I ever experiment on my pet rats?
I'm betting yes.
I did, actually.
I knew it.
I'd read that rats like to learn, and they're quite smart, right? It's one of the reasons I got them. So I basically looked up all these videos of people teaching their rats to do things and tried to teach them the same tricks. And they were good at some, and they weren't so good at others. So their entire life was one big experiment of what can you do.
I think that's nice. That's enrichment.
Exactly.
Is that an experiment, or is that just training?
Well, I suppose part of it was experimenting on how good I am as a trainer as well. So it was a bit of both. I was terrible at teaching them fetch.
Fetch? Can rats play fetch? That's so cute.
Apparently, yeah. But I taught them to operate pulleys and do various things to find food, and they come and sit on my shoulder and ride around on it. They must have enjoyed it.
That seems quite advanced. I'm impressed.
That's just like two steps away from ratatouille. They next needed to know how to cook. And then they would have pulled your hair and in different directions while sat on your shoulder. And boom, ratatouille.
Yeah, Groot did used to sort of sit on the edge of the sofa and be like, I want to go over there. Can you just pick me up, please? And I did.
Aww. I like that you knew what he wanted as well.
Of course. Spent far too much time with him.
Oh, that's lovely. So, Ellie, you're a zoologist with a science writing career. You must have seen quite a few studies on animal behaviour, especially rats.
I think rats come up a lot, both in studies on animal behaviour, but also studies on like medical things. Like, they're always the go-to lab subject. So it's quite interesting to see what they are capable of and whether animals in a lab behave differently to wild rats. There's far less studies, I think, or that I've come across myself, on like wild rat behaviour. So some of these studies that we're going to talk about are pretty unusual and not something that you would ever really come across rats doing in the wild. Laura's laughing because she knows what's in store.
And I've studied AS psychology, so I understand a little bit about behavioural studies, but that's mostly on humans. It'll be interesting to see what we find in terms of studies on rats and their behaviour. And something that inspired this episode was the study about rats having imagination.
Yeah, so this is something that I came across at work, which I think, when you say it like that, it sounds pretty wild. But when you, like, drill down into the nitty-gritty, it's more believable. I think people think of rats as quite clever. I feel like that's a commonly held thing of all the animals. But then to have imagination suggests cognitive ability beyond that. I think more like awareness of self and awareness of like things being there and not being there. Like being able to imagine a place is quite a complex skill to imagine an animal having, you think?
See, I would kind of think that to be able to survive in the wild, rats and a lot of other animals would just kind of be able to do that sort of thing. Like, how would they remember where they put food or where the danger lies or whatever else if they can't sort of think these things through and imagine a scenario in the future?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, but then it's not really my field of expertise. All I know is what I've seen my rats do.
Do you think your rats remembered stuff that you taught them?
Definitely. So we had them in a pen in the evenings on the living room floor, which was sellotaped to the edge of the fireplace. And when the tape came away, Rocket was like, oh, I can get out of here. I'll push this aside and run around the living room. And when we put new tape on to tape it back up, she still remembered that she could have gotten out, and she would stand there pushing quite violently against it until we told her off and had to train her out of doing it.
I wonder if she could imagine the possibilities of being like, I could escape and then go wherever I could imagine and could think of. Like, she knew that there was more out there beyond the tape wall.
She did, but funnily enough, if she really wanted to, because she could jump up on top of that barrier that formed the edge of the playpen, right? She could have just jumped down the other side, but she never did.
So maybe she couldn't imagine doing that.
So is that imagination or is that just memory?
That's what I was going to say. Like, training is basically memory. Like, you do the same thing over again, you learn that you get a reward for completing a task, and then you remember what to do to get that reward. So this came about because we looked at this study, and they put brain electrodes on rats, obviously, and used VR to show that rats could navigate using the like brain machine interface, but not navigate as in walk from A to B while wearing the thing, but navigate through the VR space.
See, putting a rat in VR, in virtual reality, so they had, it looked from the experimental setup like they had like a little goggle set up in front of them with a little screen.
Yeah, I think that's what they did. That's what I got from that image.
I could have sworn that studies have shown that rats have really terrible eyesight.
Yeah, that's so true.
And they tend to navigate using their whiskers to detect air currents and sense of smell and whatever else, and sound presumably. So just looking at VR, I'm very surprised that the rats could do this. So they obviously do have some ability to see things. And I don't know if they just happened to find rats that incidentally had good eyesight.
Yeah, I don't know how much eyesight even played a part of it, because in one of the studies, they had to move an object to a goal in like within the VR reality, like by using their brain waves. So like how you would imagine sitting in an office, and instead of getting up to go to the coffee machine and filling it with coffee, that would have been the goal for the mouse, for the rat, but they weren't actually moving it, they were just imagining doing it in their mind.
That sounds less like training and much more like cognitive behavior for me as a non-expert in behavior and biology, but that sounds like imagination, because I can imagine like walking through the paces like muscle memory.
Yeah,
but to actually see a thing and yeah, use the brain waves to visualize it.
Yes, they were also on treadmills, so they were moving as if you would, if you were playing a VR game, you'd still be moving. And they also, so they like found out that they could do this because they were looking at the firing patterns of the hippocampal cells in the brains of the rat. And they did semi-train them. Like they trained the BMI machine to like learn what the hippocampal cells firing looked like, I think.
Yeah, the BMI machine. Every time you say that, I think body mass index.
I know.
Yes.
But it means brain machine interface, right?
This one is brain machine interface, yeah.
Basically the electrodes that they somehow inserted into the rat brain, which they don't seem to talk about in the research article at all. I'm sure I saw in the press release they basically did surgery on the brains to put these sensors in there.
I would have thought so.
Not just on the outside, because when I had a study, it was just glued to my scalp.
Did they shave your scalp first?
No, they just rubbed it really hard and it hurt.
Yes, I've had one of those done, and they measure your brainwaves doing that.
Yeah.
I think this is more involved, though. I think this is quite invasive.
So not only did they create a study about how a rat's brain works and create an interface against it, they made VR goggles, they made a little mini game space.
A little harness to put the rat in.
Yeah, a little harness.
Yeah, it's involved. They also named it the Jedi experiment because they were like using the force to move something with their mind.
That's a lot of effort that they went to. Why?
Why is a good question.
The brain machine interface, you mentioned the research paper, they're talking about like, is it possible to control robotic arms using only your mind?
Ooh.
And how does the brain actually work to do that?
Like, if they could do it in rats, could then we translate this to people in some way? Because there have been studies on people where you're supposed to, like, you can control a car, like park a car in a garage using only your thoughts. You might have done those, they're quite common at, like, science fairs. So I don't know if this is, like, a similar thing to, like, harness the power of your brainwaves. But it is, I think it's quite interesting in terms of both potential applications for people, but also knowing rats could do this. Like, rats, I said they were intelligent, but in the grand scheme of things, they're not up there. So then presumably other more intelligent species could also do this, but you wouldn't get ethics clearance to do this on like a gorilla or a chimp.
So why rats? Why do we have lab rats as opposed to any other animal?
Well, unfortunately, probably money and relative ease of breeding them. And no one, well, people are bothered, but people are much less bothered about rats than they are about things like monkeys and dogs and cats.
Sadly, yeah, because rats have got a bit of a bad reputation for spreading diseases and just apparently being horrific. And they're really not. They're really adorable creatures.
And very intelligent and very cool.
Yeah. But I think one thing I'd read was that because you can interbreed rats, it keeps their genetic heritage fairly similar. So if you wanted to have a load of rats that were the same, and there are different models of rats, they call it in the scientific catalogues. If you ever want to look for some scientific equipment, there are models of rat. So you can have a model of rats that have a particular set of traits, so it's more likely to do a particular thing.
I suppose if we were trying to, say, replicate this in humans, there's like lots of factors to consider, like lifestyle and genetic, whereas I suppose you kind of almost have a fixed variable in a lab rat because you know exactly what its genetic makeup is, you know where it's from, and you literally keep it under laboratory conditions, right?
Yeah. I mean, often I think a lot of these rats will have been in this experiment potentially for most of their lives. So they come from wherever you source rats from, and they are for this experiment. I don't know if they killed them after or euthanized them or whatever, but probably. And then at least if you were to replicate this experiment as a different lab, a different research group, you could do it in the same way and know that the rats weren't what was causing the issues. But then, of course, there's always individual variation and all the rest of it. But it is quite unusual study, really.
I mean, brain electrodes for tiny rat brains aside, and putting them in a harness that I imagine they wouldn't like initially. It does sound like quite a fun, novel experiment to do. Seeing a rat move something in virtual reality, I imagine, is quite impressive. It sounds like one of those sort of eureka moments.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's quite impressive as well, because to even think we can do this, can rats do this, as a question, is quite interesting in the first place. And then, okay, how do we go about finding out whether rats could do this? Well, we need to make a virtual reality space, we need to have this treadmill, we need to have a brain-machine interface. So even just doing the experiment in the first place, we've surely already learned things that we didn't know before.
True. But there have been other studies, haven't there? Like, did you say, preparing for this episode, that there was a study where mice were taught to play virtual reality games?
Yes. So this is quite a similar study about sort of memories and neuroscience, I suppose. But yeah, they basically got mice playing VR games and then looked at the brain activity that was happened. And the reason that they did this one is because they wanted to see whether regions of the brain were involved in memory retention. And they didn't necessarily know if that region that they were looking at was. So this is what they decided to come up with, that experiment, to see if they could find out what was going on.
Okay, so I suppose that's useful for if someone's had a brain injury and it could affect their memory in some form, short term, long term, whatever. I guess it's a way of figuring out how it's been affected and how you could help rehabilitate someone.
Yeah, so this was much more of like they were on a little roly ball and they were running through like a virtual maze, and then they ran through the maze, took all the right turnings, and they got the sugar water as a reward, and if they like went the wrong way, they got a puff of air to the face. So basically they learned which way to go to get the sugar. So yeah, it was definitely something that they were looking at long term to see if it was be applicable to humans, I think.
Yeah, so good for neuroscience generally, and also good for understanding animal behavior as well, I suppose.
Yeah, they said the anterior thalamus may be playing a bigger role than previously realized in determining what gets forgotten and what can be recalled for weeks to come.
I'll pretend to know what the anterior thalamus is and where it's located.
I don't know either. I know it's in the brain, but I couldn't tell you any more than that.
Why did we have to make it VR instead of the traditional maze?
That's true. I think because presumably we needed to look at their brain activity rather than just could they remember which way to go, because we wouldn't have known then how to link that to the brain region. So maybe by making it VR, they could do a similar thing. I don't know if it says on this one whether they had brain implants to look at it.
Because in the rat one, because they were on that little rollerball-y thing, and they had in the diagram, like they were wearing some sort of little helmet with all these cables coming up to the top. And that was like the fixed point. So I presume it is just an easier experimental setup.
Yeah, maybe.
That's true, actually. How do you scan someone who's moving?
Yeah.
We don't typically do that, do we?
No, you put your rat or your mouse on a treadmill instead.
Yeah.
Give them a VR headset and set them on their way.
I will say our rats did like running on a custom-built wheel that was made specifically for them. They really enjoyed that.
Oh, that's like, I always remember like hamsters having wheels when I was a kid, or like balls that you put them in.
Oh, yes.
Which I think is like a good enrichment.
Yeah, apparently they got like a runner's high out of using them. So they generally just enjoyed running.
I see a lot of cat treadmills on TikTok and I always think, is that going a bit far? I know if I bought one, Sparks would just deliberately ignore it because I'd spent hundreds of pounds on it.
Wait until you've gone. Have a run.
Yeah, exactly. She'd hear the key in the lock and immediately just pretend to be sleeping on the sofa.
There are some slightly more practical experiments on rats that don't involve virtual reality. I really like the study where they taught them to drive cars.
I love that study.
I know Stuart Little is a mouse, not a rat. But is it like going into a little motor radio car?
It was some little kit car type thing that they stuck a basically a food container on top, didn't they?
Yeah, it was literally a plastic jar on wheels.
But it had controls inside the plastic jar. Was there a plate underneath their feet and then some levers? So their back feet when they were standing on the plate and then their forepaws when they were on the controls completed a circuit.
Yeah, like they were taught how to drive it as well, which took like a long time.
Oh.
But they actually were driving it themselves to like learn a new skill.
I'm sure I remember people saying that the rats just like driving around afterwards, like you didn't even have to give them a reward and they just drive around quite happily because they enjoyed it.
Yes, they definitely said that because they said they gave them a fruggery? Just combined two words, a sugary fruit loop as a reward, but then even when the reward wasn't there, they just kept driving.
Oh, so cute.
There was an idea in the research paper, wasn't there, that it was sort of like the enjoyment of learning a new skill and mastering something that made them want to do it.
Yeah, so they really tested this as well. So they tested the rat poo for stress hormones, these two hormones that they were looking for control stress, and they found that after this experiment they like had less stress, so they thought that the rats were happier after they'd mastered how to drive a car, which is potentially the most wholesome study that's ever happened.
Wow. So all those experiments you're running wasn't a bad thing either for your rats, Laura.
You should have got a plastic jar and a set of wheels.
If I'd have thought about it, I did teach them to ride a skateboard.
Oh, I've never been more sad that your rats are no longer with us.
Oh.
I do still have the videos. They are quite fun. But yeah, I think I'd run out of things that I could feasibly teach them as well. The skateboard trick was the last successful thing I did with them. And it did take quite a while. It took a few weeks. And I think it was similar to this experiment because I had to teach the rat to get into the jar and then approach the controls, and then interact with the controls, and then start moving the vehicle around. And it was similar to getting a rat to ride a skateboard. They had a little pulley, and I'd already taught them how to use the pulley in a separate setup.
A separate experiment.
Told you I used to experiment on them. So they had to learn to get on the skateboard and then be comfortable with the skateboard moving, and then operate the pulley whilst on the skateboard in different configurations until they could pull themselves along.
That is unbelievable. Yeah. I'm just imagining you sat on your living room floor being like, come on, Rocket, come on, Groot, you could do it. Like, another stage, another step further.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just a packet of Cheerios open beside you. Come on, guys.
Yes. They got very used to expecting treats to come from above. What my attempt to teach them fetch worked out as. They got really used to touching the little ball that I'd created and picking it up, and then immediately looked up and kind of waved a paw in the air like, so where's the food?
Come on. Yeah, I was trying to teach Sparks fetch the other day, and she's really good at chasing and then being by the thing but not bringing the thing back to me.
Oh, I'd never considered teaching a cat to play fetch, but why not? She's probably about as good as our dog is. Sounds about the same behaviour.
It's Smudge not a fan of fetch.
He definitely likes chasing things and being chased. But yeah, bringing stuff back and dropping it to throw it again, not so much.
Oh.
Again, maybe it's just I'm not a very good trainer when it comes to fetch. All the evidence so far is suggesting that.
He's too busy skateboarding with his pulley.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think you've got a good track record for training, at least rats. Maybe Smudge just needs a different approach.
I have no idea. He's very excitable, and that definitely plays a part in his ability to pay attention to things.
That was a part of that first study that we mentioned. One of the study authors wrote, he was like, the stunning thing is how rats learn to think about a place and know other place for a long period of time, based on perhaps our naive notion of the attention span of a rat. It's clearly a common factor of like, I don't think they'll concentrate for long enough to do this, but they prove us wrong every time.
The advice I read did say teach your rat in small bursts of a few minutes at a time. And that study, the one about finding out that rats have imagination, they did say there was one rat that was just terrible at all the experiments and just couldn't do it. Not all rats.
Not all rats. Oh. Well, talking of wholesome studies, there's also a really cute one about rats. Maybe you found this, Laura, that they laugh when they're tickled.
Yes, someone told me about this, and they laugh in sort of an ultrasonic frequency. It's about 50 hertz, which is too high for human ears to hear. But if you have a bat detector, Guess what I did?
Of course you have a bat detector.
Yeah, our rats didn't ever make any noise at all in any of the frequency ranges that the detector could detect. And we tested it on actual bats in the garden. It could detect them. But no, the rats, Rocket and Groot, didn't speak to each other. The only time I've heard them make noise is when they're angry and they'd shriek at each other. Or when Rocket, you know, I said she'd push the edge of her pen to try and escape because she'd done it once. She got her paw caught under the pen at one point. It was pinned between the pen and the floor. And she sat there chirruping away. And Groot and I went running over to rescue her.
Oh, that's so cute. I mean, sad for her, but also, did you sort of immediately know that the noise is not, I'm playing noise, it's a please help me noise.
Exactly. It's the only time I've heard her make that noise as well. But it did teach her a lesson, so it's her own fault. But it kept telling her not to.
Yeah. They have to learn the hard way sometime.
The rats laughing paper. There have been quite a few studies, I think.
Yeah, like 3 or 4, even more. There's like one research group that's really into rat laughter.
Yeah, but apparently their research goes back to like the 90s and they were experimenting on people, I think. I didn't read all of their research, so I might be wrong there. But they just kind of had this assumption that, well, if human juveniles laugh and interact in a particular way when they're playing, maybe rats do too. Maybe this 50 kilohertz chirruping we've been hearing is rat laughter.
I don't know if they were looking initially at toddlers or like young kids, but they found that it was very similar. If you tickle a rat, they make these like high-pitched little chirps. But then it's the same thing that making the rats laugh made them like bond together and they would find hands. So they basically just tickled them with their hands, but they would find those specific hands that had made them laugh before and go back to those hands, which is adorable.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, and it seemed to be specific to juvenile rats as well. So an older rat was less likely to exhibit the same behaviour and seek out ticklish fingers.
Oh, and also the rat pups found that they were like given a choice by one that was like quite a happy, laughy rat and one that wasn't. And they always spent more time with the happier grown-up rat.
That is similar to human behaviour because you tend to seek out people that make you feel more positive about things, right? The people that cheer you up.
Yeah, of course.
There have been a few studies recently, similar to the VR game experiments, where they've looked at regions of the brain that are involved in laughter and whatever else.
There's some also in monkeys and apes and stuff as well, but I was just trying to remember about this one. Oh, yes, it was an emotion, wasn't it? Humans to know, like, what laughter means by the sound of the laugh. So sometimes laughter can be like, oh, that's funny, I'm happy, I'm laughing. But also it can be, like, quite sinister. But people can tell by listening to the sound of the laugh what sort of laughter it is without, like, obviously knowing the context.
I feel like you'd have to be conditioned to know that. Like, if you'd never heard a sinister laugh before, how would you know it's sinister?
Well, apparently, so they hired actors, because obviously it's very hard to record laughter in the moment. So they got, I think, got 6 or 7 actors and recorded them laughing and then, like, gave each of the actors, like, a scenario, like a laughing type, and then, yeah, got people to analyse whether they could change it. So there was joyful laughter, taunting laughter, oh, Schadenfreude laughter, so, like, laughing at another person falling over, and then tickling laughter, like actually being physically tickled. They got 72 people to come and wear headphones and listen to all these laughing tracks and, yeah, find out if they were able to correctly classify the 4 things. And they could do it.
Like Laura said, is that a learned behaviour? Is that something innate, kind of like being able to identify someone's facial expression, but then some neurodiverse people struggle with that a bit more and have to kind of learn it as a skill rather than knowing it.
Like as the social like clues rather than just knowing, yeah, innately. Apparently they wrote down the Schadenfreude laughter was interesting, the most interesting, because it was dominant, like sounded dominant, but not as dominant as the taunting. So they could like really differentiate between the two.
I feel like this needs more research to figure out what cues people are paying attention to and whether you do need to be taught it in advance, because these are actors, right? So they've probably been taught in acting school that as soon as the laugh sounds like this, jovial laugh sounds like this.
Yeah, or how cross-cultural will this be as well? Because what if there are certain sounds we make because we speak this language or because of the culture around you and how much of it is actually innate human behaviour?
Yeah, it did say in this laughing study that they were all English speakers, but that's as far as they went with their like description of the people. But yeah, I think that's also true, because obviously you always say like British humour and American humour are quite different. So maybe like a laugh, a joyful laugh in America at like that's a funny joke on TV versus a joyful laugh in the UK might not sound the same.
No, I think I'll stick with experimenting on rats. I like the idea of just tickling rats for science.
I like that it makes them happy. And them driving in that car study is just so cute.
Can you imagine writing the grant proposal for that? So in this study, we would like to tickle some rats and get them to drive cars. Because it'd be fun.
I would like to buy 10 sets of Kinex wheels, please. And 5 motors. Yeah, I do wonder how they got that through. You know, what benefit does this have to research? But they did learn stuff. They did learn about stress and, you know, learning skills and all that sort of thing. So it did have scientific value beyond the fact that it's cute to watch rats drive around in little cars.
Yeah, I think that's just a side benefit, isn't it? There has to be a really tangible reason for doing it.
An actual proper benefit.
Yeah, I'm also pretty sure that most of these studies came out of the United States as well. And I do wonder if the way they're science funding is set up is a little bit different and they get a little bit more free rein to just do some experiments because they want to.
Maybe. There's also a thing about like if you haven't spent money by a certain time, you lose the money. So if you've got like a little pot left, you might as well do something with it rather than lose it. So I wonder if any of these were like, oh, Dave, you know that little pot that we've got? Can we use it on rat cars, please? Before it gets... You know, we've only got 12 weeks left and it'll take 11 weeks to train them. We can just squeeze it in time.
You'd have to be working in that sort of space in the first place. So can you imagine, like, what's the, like, our author's history of journal papers? It was, like, serious neural brain surgery and then rat driving cars.
Yeah, how did they get there? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
What's the rat driving car researcher pipeline? What did they do first?
Yeah, because even just the first one we were talking about with the VR headset, there's just so many moving parts. I can't imagine how they put this study together. Because if you were looking at one area, would you think, you know what, I need this kind of person? Or do you just learn all those skills to make that experiment work?
Yeah, that's so true, because you're right. It is like neurosurgery or neuroscience plus VR, plus handling the rats, which is a skill in itself. So, yes. Yeah, I don't know. Laura's like, oh my God.
Laura, please tell us, how did you do this?
I just remember trying to take the rats to the vets, and they were really not keen on this whole thing. And then the vet trying to hold them. They weren't a rat specialist, the first person I took them to. It was quite a struggle because they were very small rats as well.
Aww.
And they clearly didn't want to be there. Rats' eyes get quite big when they're very excited or very emotional, and their eyes like popping out of their heads is the phrase that springs to mind.
I mean, no animal likes going to the vet, do they? But still.
I'm sure our dog did at some point. So he got treats and he got to say hello to people.
Aww. That was definitely not my cat's experience. I can get her into the carrier very easily by putting her favourite toy inside. And I'm surprised because I would thought she associates negativity with the carrier, but she doesn't. And I keep it in the living room so it's not like a surprise when it's out there.
Yeah.
So I could just throw her favourite toy in. She goes in. I close the door. A couple of minutes, she's like normal, and then she realises.
Then it kicks in.
Yeah.
That she's going somewhere she doesn't want to go.
Yeah. And then all the way to the vet, it's just sad meows. And then on the way back, it's dead quiet.
Maybe she's traumatised by her experience.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going home now. It's fine. I don't need to make noise.
But it's funny that you said sad meows, because you can clearly tell that she's upset. I mean, you know that she's upset because she's going to the vet. But is that like the laughter? Like, you know that she's not doing her usual happy laughs, her happy purrs or meows.
Do you need to collect her poop and then analyse it? Similar to the experiment of the driving cars.
Yeah, we've got to look at her stress levels and Buffy pre and post vet visit.
Unfortunately, one of those vet visits was because she wasn't pooping correct, so I might not have ever got the answer. Now we're talking about cats, which are not rats, I think.
I finally taught Antonia some zoology.
But can I identify them in a picture without having known what they were before? Do I know what a rat is inherently? Probably not.
Well, at some point someone's taught you.
Yes, so it's learned behaviour.
Learned behaviour.
Anyway, we've... I think we'll draw this conversation to a close. We've learned that various studies on rat behaviour could have other implications for understanding how the human brain works or other animals. We could apply it to medicine, rehabilitation. And we also know that people can design VR for even as small as rats, which can have great impact on other areas of life and science.
I'm still astounded by this. I feel like I should visit one of these labs at some point. I might retrain and do another PhD in rat VR.
Please do, because we would love to have that. Think of all the videos you could get of the rats in their virtual world.
I shall go and have a look and find a PhD.
Yeah, you're just ticking off all the different disciplines you can go into, Laura.
Sure, why not? Because computational chemistry to radiation chemistry to behavioural science and neuroscience makes perfect sense.
Perfect sense.
Absolutely.
We've always said that.
There's radiation, there's chemistry in the brain, you know. Normal.
Now that would make an interesting grant proposal. I'll stop talking.
Well, if you'd like to hear more of this, check out our other episodes and we'll see you in another one.
The views expressed in this podcast belong entirely to the person that said them. They do not represent any industry or organisation. If you enjoyed listening to these views, it would really help us out if you could rate us, leave a review and tell a friend. This podcast was sponsored by no one, but if you're interested in funding us to continue to have frank discussions about science and engineering, please get in touch.